On the first Ram Navami, after the consecration of the Ram Temple in Ayodhya, today at noon, a Surya Tilak or sun's rays illuminated the Ram Lala idol's forehead. This was done by using mirrors and lenses, and it was watched by the Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, who was in Assam at the time campaigning. The Prime Minister said it was a very emotional moment for him. Hundreds of people were in Ayodhya for Ram Navami.
A first for temple town Ayodhya on Ram Navami. Lakhs of devotees witnessed this special event where the forehead of the Ram Lala idol was anointed with a 5.8 cm beam of sunlight known as the Surya Tilak. The ceremony took place for approximately 3 minutes starting 12 noon. ...1200 kilometers away, Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who was at a poll rally in Assam's Nalbari, watched the entire ceremony, calling the Ram Navami celebrations at Ayodhya historic.
Pure desh mein ek naya mahol hai. Aur ye Prabhu Ram ka birthday 500 saal ke baad aaya hai, jab wo apne nij ghar mein बर्थडे मनाने का सौभाग्य मिला है.
Sunlight was precisely directed onto the Ram idol's forehead using a sophisticated apparatus consisting of mirrors and lenses that was planned and executed during the Ram temple construction.
Well, there is a sense of satisfaction, and also we have to ensure that it recurs every year on this day.
Shri Ram Lala virajman ki pran pratishtha ke baad ki ye pehli Ram Navami jisme aaj Shri Ram Lala ki murti ke upar unke vigrah par surya tilak ho raha hai.
For the lakhs of devotees who came to Ayodhya, it was an unmatched spectacle.
Main to first time hi aayi hu.
Kaisa laga aapko?
Bahut badhiya laga, bahut acha laga sir. Ram ji hamare aaradhya hain sir.
Surya Tilak mechanism exists in some Jain temples and at the Sun Temple of Konark, but they are engineered very differently. What happened in Ayodhya today is bound to increase the footfall in the temple down in the coming days and months. With camera person Virendra Kumar Saini, Tanish Punjabi for NDTV.
So quite a spectacle there in Ayodhya. Now let's talk about Bengal, where Ram Navami went off peacefully. Ram Navami rallies in and around Kolkata passed off peacefully amidst a political showdown between the Trinamool and BJP over Ram Navami processions. Now the ruling Trinamool Congress in West Bengal held a Ram Navami Shobha Yatra this morning. Earlier this year, the state government for the first time had also announced a state holiday on Ram Navami. Processions in the past, remember last year there was violence that was witnessed during the procession, and the issue took a political turn with Prime Minister Narendra Modi and Chief Minister Mamata Banerjee taking pot shots at one another's parties over Ram Navami. Let's go across to Saurabh for more. And Saurabh, so the good news there that the Ram Navami processions passed off peacefully last year witnessed a major violence, especially in Howrah. And this comes after, as we mentioned, there were pot shots between the Prime Minister and Chief Minister. But the good news, the day passed off peacefully.
Yes, largely Ram Navami rallies have passed off peacefully where they were taking place, including in Howrah. In fact, we were in Howrah in the evening, given the fact that last year there was violence there, but everything seems to have gone off peacefully. Also, notably present on the streets were the heavy amount of police personnel and security personnel, including central security forces who are here on election duty. So obviously, this was a very, very, high security affair, so to speak, in Bengal. And given the kind of political duels we've seen over Ram Navami processions, it was anticipated that there could be some trouble, which is why the police, of course, taking no chances, especially in election time. Remember, Chief Minister Mamata Banerjee and Prime Minister Narendra Modi had accused each other's party of conspiracy, one saying that the one that the Trinamool was trying to stop Ram Navami processions, the other saying that the BJP was trying to create riots. So in this context, it was a very, very, you know, secure and high security affair with lots of forces on the ground. The Trinamool also, by the way, held its own Ram Navami procession or Shobha Yatra today in the morning with Howrah candidate Prashant Banerjee and also Shavini Ghosh participating, the Jadavpur candidate. Also, you had several other rallies. Shukanta Mojumdar took part in a rally in Balurghat, and several other leaders took part in rallies across the state. But it's passed off peacefully, largely, right, is what we are being given to understand. Though we are still waiting for updates from the districts.
All right. Thanks so much, Saurav, for joining us with those details. And staying with news from Bengal, the Bengal governor, C.V. Ananda Bose, has been advised to cancel his proposed visit to North Bengal's Kuch Bihar on April 18th and 19th. The advice came from the Election Commission, which pointed out that the first phase of election is due on the 19th. And with the imposition of the 48-hour silence period from this evening, the visit will be a violation of the Model Code of Conduct. This is to ensure a free and fair election. Now, on the last day of campaigning for the first phase of the Lok Sabha elections, Prime Minister Narendra Modi held twin rallies in the northeast, reaching out to voters in Assam and in Tripura, linking the Ram Mandir success to his development model in the northeast. Ratideep Chaudhary with the details.
As the Surat Tilak ceremony was underway in Ayodhya, the Prime Minister linked Ram Navami to development. 1,100 kilometers away at a rally in Nalbari in Assam.
2014 mein Modi aapke beech ek ummeed lekar aaya tha. 2019 mein Modi jab aaya to ek vishwas lekar aaya. और 2024 में आज जब मोदी असम की धरती पर आया है, मोदी गारंटी लेकर आया है.
The Nalbari rally had a huge turnout, perhaps giving BJP hope at a time the party wants to win at least 22 of the 25 seats in the northeast along with its allies. This will mean winning 7 more seats than the NDA did in 2019. The Prime Minister's next stop, 600 kilometers away in Tripura's capital, Agartala. At this rally, Prime Minister attacked the Congress and the left.
यहाँ त्रिपुरा में इनका गठबंधन है, लेकिन केरला में ये लोग एक दूसरे के जानी दुश्मन है. कांग्रेस के युवराज यूपी में चुनाव हारने के बाद अपनी इज्जत बचाने के लिए केरला भाग गए थे. अब इन दिनों वो वहां केरला के मुख्यमंत्री ने कांग्रेस के युवराज के खिलाफ हल्ला बोल दिया है. इससे नाराज होकर कांग्रेस के युवराज ने कहा है कि केरला के सीएम भ्रष्टाचार में डूबे हुए हैं.
द पॉलिटिकल मैसेजिंग ऑफ प्राइम मिनिस्टर नरेंद्र मोदी थ्रू हिज ट्विन रैलीज इन द नॉर्थ ईस्ट वॉज परहैप्स मच बियॉन्ड द वोटर्स ऑफ दिस रीजन. He also wanted to send a strong message to the voters in over 100 constituencies which would go to polls in the first phase. In Guwahati, Ratnadeep Chaudhary for NDTV.
Now, election news from Uttar Pradesh. In a joint press conference with Congress leader Rahul Gandhi, Samajwadi Party chief Akhilesh Yadav declared the BJP will be wiped out from Ghaziabad to Ghazipur in Uttar Pradesh. He also said every promise made by the BJP turned out false and that the wind from the west would change the country in the first phase of elections. The BJP hit back, dismissing these claims and saying that both the leaders are too scared to contest themselves in these elections from Uttar Pradesh.
गाजियाबाद में कार्यक्रम इसलिए किया है क्योंकि हम दोनों लोगों ने संकल्प लिया है यहां से सफाया होगा गाजीपुर तक. जो 14 में आए थे वो 24 में चले जाएंगे और यूपी वाले स्वागत भी अच्छा करते हैं और इस बार तो ढोल नगाड़ा और सब कुछ की तैयारी है. इस बार विदाई भी बहुत शानदार होने जा रही है.
उन्होंने कहा है कि गाजियाबाद से गाजीपुर तक उत्तर प्रदेश में इंडी गठबंधन जीतेगा और एनडीए का सफाया हो जाएगा. पहला तो मैं पूछना चाहता हूं आपको उत्तर प्रदेश की सीमा गाजियाबाद से गाजीपुर तक ही क्यों नजर आई? गौतम बुद्ध नगर से भगवान गौतम बुद्ध की परिनिर्माण स्थली कुशीनगर तक क्यों नहीं नजर? दोनों में से कोई भी पूरे उत्तर प्रदेश में से कोई लड़ने की हिम्मत नहीं कर पा रहा है। राहुल गांधी जी 2019 का चुनाव हारने के बाद उत्तर प्रदेश छोड़े थे।
यूनियन होम मिनिस्टर अमित शाह टुडे कंग्रेचुलेटेड सिक्योरिटी फोर्सेस फॉर द एनकाउंटर ऑपरेशन इन छत्तीसगढ़ इन विच 29 नक्सल्स वर किल्ड एंड ही सेड दैट द गवर्नमेंट इज डिटरमिन्ड टू फ्री द कंट्री ऑफ दिस मेनेस।
कल छत्तीसगढ़ में सुरक्षा बलों को बड़ी सफलता प्राप्त हुई है। मोदी जी जब से प्रधानमंत्री बने तब से नक्सलवाद और आतंकवाद के खिलाफ एक सातत्यपूर्ण अभियान भारतीय जनता पार्टी की सरकार ने चलाया है और छत्तीसगढ़ में भारतीय जनता पार्टी की सरकार बनने के बाद वो अभियान में और गति आई। 2014 से ही हमने कैंप लगाना शुरू किया था, 19 के बाद कम से कम 250 कैंप लगे। सरकार बनने के बाद छत्तीसगढ़ में लगभग 3 महीने के समय में 80 से ज्यादा नक्सली ढेर हुए हैं।
Now, 29 Naxals were killed in that operation. Several Jawans were also injured. And NDTV's Anurag Dwari spoke to one of the injured BSF Jawans in hospital.
Ramesh ji, kaisa lag raha hai abhi? Tabiyat kaisi hai abhi aapki?
Abhi theek hai, tabiyat
theek lag raha hai.
Pehle se better.
Pehle se better hai. Kuch aapko recollect kar pa rahe hain ki do dino mein kya hua jeevan mein, jo encounter raha tha, kaise kya shuru hua, kya input mili thi, kaise aap log gaye the, kya hua wahan par?
सर्च अभियान में तो हर बार हम जा रहे थे, तो था कि मुठभेड़ कभी भी हो सकती है, कहीं भी इतनी बार जा रहे हैं, तो उसी रूटीन ड्यूटी पे हम गए थे, उसी आधार पे था, तो इनपुट था कि वहाँ प्रेजेंस है उनके 100% मतलब प्रेजेंस है। तो सर्च करते हुए पहुंचे पार्टी के बीच अपना कल्पर और हापटोला के पार्टी के बीच में, तो वहाँ जो आगे वाला बंदा था उसने देखा कि बंदे है वहाँ पर।
लगभग कितने दिखे होंगे बंदे आपने?
उसको तो दिखा स्टार्टिंग में, जैसे कोई दिखता तो एक आधा ही दिखता, जो उनका ओपी बैठा रहता है, और वहाँ वैसे उस जगह का इनपुट भी था कि यहाँ टेक SIB का PIB का सबका इनपुट था कि वहाँ नस्ली मूवमेंट है। उसी आधार पर उनको देख के हमने वहाँ घेराबंदी शुरू किया। घेरा करने के बाद में वो लोग इधर चारों तरफ से घेरने के बाद में तो इधर उधर भागेंगे, इधर उधर जैसे भागने की शुरू किया उन्होंने, उनके अब भागने के लिए कुछ तो करेंगे, फायर उन्होंने फायर शुरू किया। फायर करते इधर से जवाबी कार्रवाई में फिर हो गया शुरू, उतरी मैदान जंग बन गया।
तो आप लोग तो शायद सोमवार की रात में निकल गए थे ना कल्पर? हाँ, के लिए
15 तारीख को शाम को निकले थे।
15 की शाम को निकले?
जी जी, रात को निकले थे हम लोग।
तो रात को सबसे पहले कहाँ पहुँचे? थाना बेटिया के पास ही कुछ ब्रीफिंग हुई थी रात को 12-1 बजे।
मैं बेटिया थाना में ही था, मैं थाना बेटिया में, सीओ थाना बेटिया में था मैं। वहाँ से टीम हमारी वहाँ से निकली थी, पखान से 2-3 जगह से आए थे, सारी टीम एक जगह लॉन्च होकर देखी इस पार से तैयार होकर बाद में लॉन्च हुई हम लोग 15 तारीख को रात को। 16 तारीख को सवेरे जो एरिया था उसको 4-5 बजे तक हमने कॉर्डन कर लिया। उसके बाद जो फर्स्ट वाला पॉइंट था कि यहाँ नक्सली थे, वहाँ उनके मिलने की था कि यहाँ मिलेंगे, लेकिन वहाँ थे नहीं। उसे अगले वाले टेकरी को अपने सर्च किया तो वहाँ उनके टेल साइन मिले थे कि रास्ते में बर्तन खाना खाने का बर्तन वर्तन ऐसे कुछ मिले थे, चावल के थे उधर, तो ताजा आदमी का था। उसी के आधार पर हमने थोड़ा आगे और सर्च किया तो वहाँ उनकी होती जनसंख्या, और पहले भी था ही उम्मीद कि शंकर डीवी सी में जो मारा गया है उसके साथ मिलिट्री कंपनी के कुछ बंदे होंगे वहाँ पर, 10-15-20-25 आदमी सूचना थी पहले से।
An NDTV exclusive interview, Emma Riley, a former employee of the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, has made some startling allegations of China subverting multilateral organizations and of corruption. This ahead of UK's Foreign Affairs Committee inquiry. Speaking to NDTV's Nikunj Garg, she's claimed a nexus between high-ranking officials and the Chinese government and that the World Health Organization altered its report on the origins of COVID.
Ms. Riley, you are making some very, very stunning claims. Welcome to NDTV. On what basis are you making all these stunning claims?
Thank you for having me. On the basis of written evidence, to be frank, I was employed within the UN for 10 years. And from 2013, I started to blow the whistle on the influence of the Chinese Communist Party on the UN Secretariat. I was employed in the UN Human Rights Office, where you would expect that human rights would be the primary goal. But in reality, that office was secretly transmitting the names of people who were about to speak out against China to the Chinese government.
Well, yes. I mean, I'm quite stunned. I read that entire copy in today's Times of India. My dear friend Naomi Canton has filed that copy, and I'm glad that I'm following that up with an interview. But I'm stunned. You are trying to say that the people who were protesting the Chinese policies, the Chinese activists who were protesting the Chinese policies, the United Nations was leaking information on them to the Chinese government.
Exactly. And this started in 2006. And according to the UN's court position in my own court cases, it continues to this day. Privately, the UN admits this openly in court. Those court judgments are public. You can read the latest court judgment in which the judge says that, yes, at all times I have told the truth. But the UN has an absolute lèse majesté law that says you can never criticize any policy of the UN. So even though this policy is equivalent, it constitutes criminal complicity in torture, it constitutes criminal complicity in arbitrary detention. Even despite that I was telling the truth, the UN says I still had no right to speak up because this is a policy of the Secretary General himself.
Well, that's all right, but I mean, this is unheard of stuff. You're trying to say that the UN is compromised to an extent that it continues to leak information of the very people that it is supposed to protect. I mean, these are individuals, of course, who are standing up against a government policy. Now, there are various pressure groups, various interest groups, various lobbying groups, etc., who can at various points in time protest against the government policy. They not necessarily may be a dissident group, they may not necessarily be a separatist group, but to leak information on them and then to leave them at the mercy of a totalitarian regime like China is quite astounding.
Yes, and some of them gave evidence in my court case as to what happened to their families after their names were handed over. People were arrested, they were detained, they were placed in concentration camps in Xinjiang. Some people's family members died in detention because they spoke out. And the UN should be denouncing that. They should not be facilitating it.
In other news, the International Monetary Fund raised India's GDP growth projection for 2024-25 by 30 basis points to 6.8% in its update to the World Economic Outlook, citing a buoyant domestic demand.
The International Monetary Fund, in its latest Global Economic Outlook report, envisioned 3.2% worldwide growth for the third straight year, with steady growth and slowing inflation, despite supply chain disruptions across the globe. The IMF said that the world is heading towards a soft landing with 3.2% growth while reining in inflation and producing steady and modest growth. The IMF expects the US economy to grow 2.7% this year, an upgrade from the 2.1% it had predicted in January, and faster than a solid 2.5% expansion in 2023. While economic growth remains strong, many challenges remain for economies across the globe.
The global economy continues to display remarkable resilience, with growth holding steady and inflation declining. But many challenges still lie ahead. Global growth was 3.2% in 2023 and is expected to remain at that level both in 2024 and 2025. This represents a 0.3 percentage point upgrade from our October projections for 2024, with stronger activity than expected in the US, China, and other large emerging markets, but weaker activity in the euro area.
Inflation and sharp price rises remain an obstacle for the globe. However, the IMF predicts global inflation tumbling from 6.8% last year to 5.9% in 2024, while in the world's advanced economies alone, inflation is expected to fall to 2.6% this year and 2% in 2025, brought down by the effects of higher interest rates.
Inflation trends are encouraging, but we are not there yet. Somewhat worryingly, progress towards inflation targets has stalled since the beginning of the year in some countries. This could be a temporary setback, but there are reasons to remain vigilant. Oil prices have been rising, in part due to geopolitical tensions, and services inflation remains stubbornly high in many countries.
The IMF raised India's growth projection to 6.8% in its latest report from its January forecast of 6.5%, citing bullish domestic demand conditions and a rising working age population, with India continuing to remain the fastest growing economy of the world, ahead of China's growth projection of 4.6% during the same period. However, growth in emerging and developing Asia is expected to fall from an estimated 5.6% in 2023 to 5.2% in 2024. Despite the world economy's resilient outlook, the IMF has warned that economic growth could be thrown off course by the continuing adverse effects of higher interest rates and geopolitical tensions, including the wars in Ukraine and Gaza, that have threatened to disrupt crucial trade routes, raising energy prices and more. With Disha Bagchi, Parmeshwar Bawa for NDTV.
Dubai, the Middle East financial center, was paralyzed by heavy rain and storm on Tuesday that caused widespread flooding around the desert country. Heavy thunderstorms flooded major roadways, airports and the city's driverless metro rail system. According to news agencies, the storm that lashed the UAE on Tuesday dumped over a year and a half's worth of rain on Dubai. Hundreds of flights were hit and passengers stranded.
As the effects of climate change cause havoc across the globe, the desert city of Dubai, a global transit hub, has come to a standstill. Heavy rains and thunderstorms plunge the city into chaos. Flooded roads, stranded commuters, disrupted flights, and even water leaking from wall ceilings. The Dubai International Airport, the world's busiest air hub, where hundreds of thousands of international passengers pass through every day, was forced to cancel or divert hundreds of flights, disrupting air travel and leaving many passengers stranded across the world. As of noon, 79 flights from Dubai were cancelled, while 178 flights were delayed, with the numbers only growing. Videos on social media show planes taxiing on flooded runways and cars half-submerged at the airport's parking lot. Such has been the disruption that Dubai airport authorities have asked travelers to stay away. "We advise you not to come to the airport unless absolutely necessary," Dubai authorities have said. Indian singer Rahul Vaidya was one of the many passengers who were stranded in the city, wading through knee-deep water. Key buildings throughout the city, from the Dubai Mall and Mall of the Emirates to the various Dubai metro stations, were also left submerged in water.
Because I don't think that Dubai is used to...
So all the tourists, there are no taxis, nothing.
Various residential areas are also grappling with severe flooding, leaving homes with collapsed roofs and roads completely washed away. Dubai is not the only city to be affected by this unexpected weather. UAE and its neighbors, Bahrain, Oman, among others, have also witnessed heavy rains. With the death toll in Oman rising to 18, with many remaining missing. Bureau Report, NDTV.